Are you ready to transform your financial future through mortgage note investing? Hi, I'm Jamie Bateman, host of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. As a passionate entrepreneur myself and real estate investor myself, I've dedicated my career to empowering investors like you. Join my mentorship program tailored to meet your unique business objectives with a very small financial commitment to get started. Gain access to my personal experience, trusted consultants and vendors, and receive customized mentoring services. You'll get hands-on guidance on everything from determining your buy box and reviewing your bidding processes to managing notes with third-party servicers, handling collateral, and much more. Don't wait. Visit LabradorLending.com to start your journey to abundance today. Let's unlock your full potential together. I had so much fun chatting with Dr. Brad Klontz and Adrian Brambilla. These two guys are co-authoring a book that's almost out, will be out in October. It's called Start Thinking Rich, 21 Harsh Truths to Take You from Broke to Financial Freedom. Man, we cover some controversial topics, and they do not pull any punches, but they bring such a positive energy to the discussion. And it's really just, you know, a discussion that needs to be had in our culture. Adrian talks about, he has a ton of social media followers and has a lot of influence. And one of the main things he's known for is how he made $1.7 million while living in a van. And we cover that later on in the episode. And so he's kind of the street smarts guy in the discussion. And he also worked years ago with T-Pain, the rapper, and he shares a pretty cool story about that. Dr. Brad Klontz is the research guy. He's a professor, has done all kinds of research about psychology, the psychology of money, and the psychology of success. And these guys together just have a synergy that is just phenomenal. It's hard to explain. I can't really get across how fun and impactful this episode was. So you'll just have to find out for yourself. Buckle up for this conversation with Dr. Brad Klontz, financial psychologist, and Adrian Brambilla, the minimalist millionaire. Enjoy.
Welcome to From Adversity to Abundance, the go-to podcast for real estate entrepreneurs seeking not just to thrive, but to conquer with resilience and mental sharpness. Each week, join us as we dive into the compelling world of real estate through the lens of mental fitness, where challenges transform into opportunities. Get ready to transform your mindset and expand your understanding of what it takes to succeed in real estate. Let's explore these stories of triumph and resilience together.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. I am your host, Jamie Bateman. And on today's episode, this is going to be a fun one. We've got two guests with us. Adrian Brambilla. Hopefully I said that right, Adrian. Is that right?
Awesome.
Close enough. Crushed it. Awesome. And Dr. Brad Klontz. Dr. Brad, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
Awesome. So, Adrian, you are known as the guy who made $1.7 million living in a van. Is that right?
Yeah, that, you know, I've been making content since 2010, early on YouTube. I used to be a professional dancer for T-Pain. So my first business was teaching me how to dance a robot. And that had like a pretty small audience, but I was living in a van during the pandemic. And that's when van life became more than an SNL skit. It actually became cool, trendy. Right. And I just happened to be living it. And I was just used to documenting it. And so I've kind of just timed the luck of like documenting van life and kind of being a minimalist, but also I've always talked about finance and wealth. And one thing that's a very big contradiction I learned, it was a happy accident, is that people that live in a van, there's an expectation that they're poor or that they have no money. Mm-hmm. Not that you would ever do it by choice, especially if you have a high net worth or a high income. Mm-hmm. So I was a visual contradiction of like, there's no way this guy's actually a millionaire if he lives in a van, because why would you do that? If you live if you're a millionaire, you need to have a Lamborghini and you need to have a mansion. Sure. So I didn't fit that mold, but that's we got popular. And that's how we came to collaborate with Dr. Brad Klontz and make our first book, which is awesome.
So slightly different than Chris Farley living over down by the river. So Dr. Brad, you are an author, co-author with Adrian, and you are the world's leading psychologist on money and success. Let's talk a little
self-proclaimed title. But I challenge anyone, you know, come on, let's go.
Absolutely. How can you disprove it? Right. So talk a little bit about what you have, a little bit about your background before we dive into your story, but a little bit about your background and what you have going on today.
Yeah. So I, got a doctorate in clinical psychology. That's where I started my work. So really helping people overcome adversity, trauma, all that. And then I, early in my career, I stumbled on how traumatized people seem to be about money and how frequently they self-sabotage. They'll start to gain some assets, start to invest, and then all of a sudden they sabotage themselves psychologically. And I got really curious about that. A big part due to my own personal story of adversity. But also, so I started to do a bunch of research on the psychology of success, the psychology of mindsets, looking at ultra wealthy, middle class, lower income people, looking for patterns so that I could essentially arm myself with a better mindset and then teach as many people as possible who are wanting to better their lives.
That's awesome. I'm finishing a book called The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks, and he talks about the upper limit problem and all about how people self-sabotage without even knowing it oftentimes. So that's very relevant for me. Before we jump back into your story, Adrian, speak briefly about the book and then we'll talk more about the book later on. But what's the book all about exactly, and why did you work on it together?
I think the reason we wanted to create a book is to help people. It's really a money finance mindset book. It's called Start Thinking Rich, 21 Harsh Truths to Take You from Broke to Financial Freedom. Brad and I were total opposite in our background. He's super edumacated. And I come from an immigrant family here. And although on paper we're totally opposite, our mindset is the same when it comes to wealth. And we actually connected through TikTok. We have a couple million followers each. And we noticed we kept popping up in each other's pages and we were saying the same message, despite having totally different backgrounds. And the foundation for sure is we want to help people. And I think right now in today's world, there's a lot of soft approaches that aren't working. If you just look at the average American in terms of how much debt they have, lack of savings, lack of investing. And so we're taking an opposite approach. We're taking a harsh approach. We have really aggressive points that we make. For example, if you want to get rich, you have to get rid of your poor friends. We can explain what that means later. We also say, for example, that your political party, whoever you vote for, doesn't really give a shit about you. Like, they're not going to take you to financial freedom. So we're making these very aggressive points, and 21 of them in the book. And then we explain through a loving perspective how even though the headline kind of punches you in the face, the chapters are like a hug that kind of teaches you the right mindset of how to think about wealth and to grow it.
Yeah, I think your timing is good, because I mean, I can't speak for other people, but I know I'm getting a little tired of you know, everybody being afraid of saying the wrong thing, and you know, let's focus on what actually works and that may hurt in the short term, right? And so let's get somewhere and get some results. And like you said, you're trying to help people. Your goal isn't to hurt people. It's actually to help people. And sometimes the kid gloves need to come off in order to do that. Dr. Brad, let's switch it up. Let's go back. That's a little more into your story, your personal story. We're not going to spend an hour on that, but let's dive into your personal story of from adversity to abundance, focusing on finances. What did that look like? What age do you want to start with?
I think I'll start with age 2.
Okay.
And that's when my parents divorced. And, you know, back then I'm old enough where that was a rare thing. So I was the only kid I knew who had divorced parents throughout my entire elementary school. You know, so the divorce was pretty hectic. There was lots of drama related to it. But one of the biggest impacts, at least on my psychology, had we were extremely poor immediately, you know, single mom working part time. And so I grew up not having much, and I come from a family system that didn't have much. So both of my grandparents lived in trailer parks, which, by the way, were way, way better than living in downtown Detroit, which is where they lived when I was really young. A very, very dangerous situation.
Sure.
I remember being at my aunt's house with hearing, you know, everyone drops on the floor, bullets are flying through the walls. And so for me,
it's all relative, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And after a while, I'm like, why are we coming here for Sunday dinner? Like, mom, what are we doing here? Anyway, I had that thought later. But it was growing up, not having much. And, mm-hmm. And frankly, you know, I lost a sibling to violence as a young mm-hmm. kid. And so I think, you know, a combination of all that thing, I definitely had trauma. Sure. And, but I really had a poor mindset because mm. I had negative attitudes about rich people. I didn't know any rich people. And I saw my family working really hard. They're good people. Mm. So I figured, well, to get rich, you must be taking advantage of other people or sure. there's something wrong with it. So I had a negative association with that.
Yeah.
But early on I realized, you know, being poor sucks, you know, and, right. there's a lot you can't do and there's a lot of problems that come along with it. And so at a very early age, I think I became a psychologist. I remember going over to my friend's house in middle school and I thought they were rich. You know, I couldn't believe how rich they were. In retrospect, they were middle class, you know. right. But to me, they had more than one bathroom in their house, Jamie. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, I just couldn't even imagine that. And I remember at the dinner table interviewing my friend's dad. Like almost like I'm a reporter, like almost like I want a roadmap. Like, how do I get a house with more than one bathroom? What did you do? That's what awesome. Do you do for a living? I mean, so I think that sort of curiosity and that desire to better my life for my kids someday sure. Really drove me along this path. And then when I became a psychologist, I realized nobody had done any work in the area of the psychology of money, which I thought was pretty weird. And so eventually I started to research, like, what does the research show us about the psychological differences. So I took the interview with my friend's father at the dinner table and I've now interviewed thousands of people.
Yeah. Took that to the next
their
level.
Psychology. Huh? Exactly. Their yeah. mindsets to try to figure out what works and what doesn't.
That's awesome. You mentioned the negative association or you assumed that rich people were bad or, you know, you had a negative association with rich people. I was just listening to a podcast with Cody Sanchez and she was talking about how, you know, if you want less of something, that's a great way to do it is create a negative association with that thing. So you're probably not going to attract money if you associate, you know, negative thoughts and all rich people are bad if you have that mindset growing up or as you're older. So, okay, so now today, okay, so you came from poverty. You know, obviously it's up to you how personal you want to get, but what does abundance look like in your situation financially today?
Yeah, you mean like what's my net worth or
well, is it like look, you know, feel free to answer that, but you described the adversity, yeah. the financial adversity you came from. What do yep. things look like today for you? How's it different?
Yeah, so I'm super blessed to be, you know, multimillionaire status many times over. But the thing for me is I got out of grad school. I owed $100,000 in student loan debt. So I had a net worth of zero. And in my training as a psychologist, I was told like, we're here to help people that make money. And coming from a lower income environment, I'm like, what, why'd I rack up all this debt if I can't make any money to pay off this debt? Mm-hmm. And so at that moment, I saw a mentor of mine who is a mentor in psychology. He made $100,000 in 1 year trading stocks. And I was like, this is the first exposure I ever had at the stock market. I remember sitting down next to him at the computer and he's like buying stuff. And I'm like, what's that? He's like, I have no idea. Clicks it. And I'm like, I could do this. right. And so I sold everything I had of value. And it sounds extreme, but it is absolutely extreme. I was driving a $500 car. I had one plate, one fork. My wife can attest to all this. I had lawn chairs for furniture. I mean, I'm going to get rich.
Yeah.
And so I had a fabulous run for about 3 months and then the tech bubble burst and I lost all my money. And that was my wake up moment. I'm like, what is wrong with the way I'm thinking about money? And so that's really started me on this journey and of, you know, learning everything from the ground up. So now I'm a I happen to be a financial planner. Also, I'm an asset manager. I own multiple businesses. And I've done tons of research. I'm a professor in this whole psychology of money.
Yeah.
But my true passion right now, and you know, you asked us before the show, what are we trying to promote? We do have all these businesses. We just want people to buy this book. Now, I'll tell you this too. You're an author. You probably know this. There's no money in books. Like we are not going to get rich from this book at all. No. But my passion really is to try to help as many people as possible. Cause frankly, I don't really need the money. Adrian doesn't really need the money. We want to teach as many people as possible. sort of writing the book I wish I had when I was a young man or even a teenager. That's the book we wrote here.
No, and many times on this show we've kind of bashed the public school system, and you know, and my family has a long history of teachers, but they, you know, so we're not here to do that, you know, but they just don't teach you these important tools and these mindset pieces, especially about money, in school. So you've got to learn it the hard way in a lot of cases. So it does sound like your book is filling an important void there, and serving an important purpose and filling a void. So Adrian, it sounds like a van is actually wealthy compared to what Dr. Brad went through. But let's jump into your story a little bit. Tell us about your background. Before we hit record, you mentioned your family, and I think you mentioned them when we did after we hit record. Tell us about your story.
Yeah, I tend to start with my parents. I feel like I love them so much. They're superheroes to me. My daddy immigrated here when he was 13 from Mexico. My mom was born here, but she was also born really poor, also Mexican. And I learned from them, even though I grew up and they didn't have much, they taught me that I could achieve anything. Like if I want something nice, if I want to do nice things, have nice experience, I can work for it. So that's like a really great mindset I inherited from my parents, because I watched them go, and my parents were the first millionaires in the Brambilla family tree. And they did it, honestly, you know, they didn't do it with like proper investing. They just saved like in ways that seem insane today. For example, they went like a few years without buying new clothes. And like, that's like a sacrifice. Like today it seems like, oh my God, how could they do that? It's because we're such big consumers today. That's just, we're just used to buying. They didn't
I think I'm actually fine with that, but most people,
Right. And most people, like if you don't have enough money, right? If you're trying to, for whatever reasons, trying to invest more or just save more, if you're buying on bills, like cut out on all these things we take for granted. And I saw a lot of my parents do this. We never went out to eat. We always cooked food. Like all these little things that it seems like, what, you guys didn't go out for a whole year? That's terrible. No, but it's what were my parents doing behind the scenes? I didn't know this until I was an adult. Like they were saving almost majority of their income. It's like, you know, part of some of the content I talk about online is like the FIRE movement, financial independence, retire early. So they were basically doing it before it was this trendy thing.
Cool.
Yeah. It was like, it's like this immigrant mindset. It's like, we're going to save as much money as we can. Now, if they would have learned about like investing into like real estate, or even the stock market, I think they could have done even so much better, but they taught me that. I'll just briefly mention that in high school, I was really bullied and I felt like I was really boxed in. So, and I went to school in SoCal and I feel like I had to go far away. I ended up going to school in Iowa, private. Yeah, small college. It was totally random. And honestly, my motivation was like, I need to get away from bullies, which is funny because bullies are everywhere.
Bullies also exist in Iowa.
Yes, exactly. They exist everywhere. I had to learn that there's going to be bullies in every walk of your life. As adults, like we have bullies today. Like there's mean people. And so you have to stand up for yourself and you have to conquer through, and you can't let other people affect your life. That's one of the biggest regrets people have is they're living life based off other people's expectations. And that actually affects wealth tremendously. Hence people buying name brand designer stuff. Yep. Why are they buying it? Do they really love it? No. So they can flex to other people.
Yeah.
But I think
Dave Ramsey talks about that, right?
Yes.
Buying things you don't actually need to impress people you don't actually like, something like that.
Yeah. It's so true.
Yeah.
But, and then the most random thing happened while I was in Iowa. I was partying and drinking alcohol like most college kids. But then I stopped because when I came home on my first semester, my parents, who worked so hard and saved more money for my college to pay for it than they did for themselves, is when they said, "How was college?" I lied to them. I was like, "Oh, it's great. I'm studying really hard. I'm working great." And I felt so guilty when I came back to school. I was like, I'm going to stop drinking. So I did. Now, in college, that takes up so much time, partying, drinking,
and recovering,
and then being hungover.
For sure.
So I started dancing. I learned how to dance the robot in Iowa, and I got like, I think it's God's miracle. After 2 years of dancing, learning from YouTube, I got an audition for T-Pain, and I ended up making it as a professional dancer for T-Pain. That basically changed my life. But T-Pain was the very first wealthy person I feel like I met. When I first came to his house, he did have a mansion. He had 30 cars. I remember he had this Mini Cooper that was souped up like a monster truck. Like, wow. He had all the gadgets and stuff. And we talk about in the book, you know, rich is what you see, wealth is what you can't see. And so, you know, many years later, you know, T-Pain did have to file, you know, some bankruptcy stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but for me as a kid, I'm just seeing all this stuff. It's like, oh, this
guy
must.
Opening your eyes, you've just never been exposed to this much abundance, like financial abundance before, right?
Right. And, but yeah, so that changed my life. And when tour abruptly ended, I started posting on the internet, teaching people how to dance the robot. And that ended up being my first online business. And I've created many since then, but I failed mostly at all of them. And probably out of like hundreds and hundreds of failures of just getting used to, you know, not making money, trying something and failing, it's just become a habit. And ultimately I haven't given up. And now I have a few businesses that do well and a team of 15 people now.
Wow. That's awesome. I mean, that's, you know, and I'm sure Dr. Brad, you probably had a couple of failed businesses as well. You know,
it's, I probably got a couple failing right now.
Gotcha. Yeah.
We're talking.
You probably started a couple during this interview. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I mean, that's the fact that you both come from poverty, you know, may help you realize that, hey, it's okay. That's not, you know, wealth isn't necessarily where your self-worth comes from. And maybe you're willing to take more risk or bounce back better than those who maybe were born into extreme wealth. And then they maybe have a scarcity mindset because of that. They don't know if they're going to be okay without that money. But the entrepreneurship is not for the faint of heart. And you definitely got to be willing to roll with ride the roller coaster through the lows and the highs. And that's okay. So now, Adrian, so briefly talk about the 1.7 million from a van. How did that work? I'm sure there are more, lots of videos online people can check out as well, but what's the synopsis there?
After my dance business, I was working on online. I was hitting a ceiling of $5,000 per month, and that was enough for me to quit, but it wasn't enough. It wasn't a six figure income. And I was so surprised. Why didn't more people want to learn how to dance the robot, Jamie? Do you know?
Yeah. I've,
so
you'd
like,
your,
I,
you'd have your work cut out for me, for you.
Well, maybe we create a special episode of robot dancing. But after that, I started learning all the different ways people can make money online. I tried them all, like without selling feet pics. You know, I tried all the legit ones. But they're blogging, affiliate marketing, selling on Amazon, selling on Etsy, eBay. Like, there's so many different opportunities that exist online. And I gravitate towards that kind of from just, it's like a video game to me. Sometimes it feels like online. I grew up playing video games, so it felt like it. And I never put myself in a financial situation where all these times, all these things I'm mentioning, I'm failing at all of them. But I never would put myself in, like, I never used debt to basically like try Amazon and then be out of $30,000 in debt. So like I always would take these very, very small risks, and I would learn. And it never, despite failing, they never took me out of the game. Eventually, I started to sell other people's products from my dance audience. For example, my YouTube channel maybe had like 60,000 subscribers, and say, Adrian, what's that beanie that you're wearing? Where are those headphones? Where do I get those? And I was just sending them, like, oh, they're here. They're Skull. The Skull is the name. And then they say, you know what? If you actually give me an affiliate link, you can make money from that. So I had a subscriber teach me how to do affiliate marketing. And then that gave me the idea of, like, wait a second. So I actually don't have to make headphones, but I can make money from headphones.
Right.
And then that really snowballed to today. Now, this is something also, I don't know if anyone, I'd have to say, who can challenge me on this. I'm probably the most versatile affiliate marketer in the world. Like, today I promote over 500 different companies, and again, it's not just myself. And I'm the number one affiliate for many different companies across all different ranges. I have dozens of blogs and brands. So before living in the van, I actually had all those in place. I just, all that, you know, being a minimalist at heart, I we live way underneath our means. Mm-hmm. Where does most of our money go? It goes towards investing. Like that's my biggest, where does my money go at every single month or year? It's investments. My cost of living, if I make more, another 10 million or something, my cost of living, I don't know if it's going to change that much. Like right now, the biggest splurge I have is like, I have a pickleball court that will be done in my house like in 3 weeks. So, but besides, that, my cost of living is super low. And so living in a van, although it seemed like a shock to the external world, to me, it's like, oh, this makes sense. Everything I own is in this van. That's perfect. And
it's never going to be enough anyway. So, you know, whether you have five mansions or not, it's there's still that there's always more, right? I'm 100% addicted to pickleball now, and the last year has been really fun, and I'm also super lucky. A friend of mine put in a court, and we've been borrowing his real estate, if you will, for a lot. Unfortunately, he tore his ACL, so he hasn't been able to play, not through pickleball, but yeah, pickleball is so much fun. But so cool. Yeah, we'll have to do, that'll be a third episode. We can do the dancing one and a pickleball one. So yeah, man, it's there's so much more, so many rabbit holes I'd love to go down with both of your stories, but obviously we don't have the time. Okay, Dr. Brad. So how did you two meet? You met online. Talk about how you met and why you decided to work together.
Yeah, so we did. It's kind of a strange story. I guess it's not that strange nowadays, but for my generation. So Adrian and I ran across each other's content. We were early adopters on TikTok. And you know, here I'm a respected professor, I guess. You know, I'm still worried that my dean's going to like turn on TikTok and be like, "What the hell?" Right. Cuz I still teach. We were early on there. My nephews actually showed me that app, and it was really engaging at the time with the algorithm, all this funny stuff. And then all of a sudden I saw this video pop up and somebody was selling day trading. And I was like, now remember, I just lost all my money day trading a couple decades ago. And I was so appalled. I'm like,
triggering.
Oh no, no, no. Is it back? Is it back? Oh no. And then I was like, of course it's back. The market's been screaming. And so literally I got on TikTok to start making anti-day trading content. And because I've read all the studies on day trading, so I know the statistics, not only do I have my own experience. And so, so I was making content like that. And then sure enough, like they funnel your feed based on your interest. And I started to see videos of Adrian popping up, and, I just loved his message. I loved his vibe. He brought the robot into his videos too, which was kind of fun. And, we just started to comment on each other's videos. And then eventually we started to make videos, insulting the other one. You know, like pretending to be each other and everything. We just had a lot of fun with it. And then in the pandemic, I actually met Adrian in person when he was driving to get his van across the country to pick up his van. And then we just connected, you know, on, he turned me on to pickleball too. I'm an addict. Awesome. We all have a problem. We should start a support group.
Yes.
But we just started to
much worse things to be addicted to.
Exactly. True. And then we just got sort of passionate about finding ways to collaborate to help bring our message to more and more people.
That's awesome.
I think there's a lesson here though for everyone that's listening to is Brad and I would have never crossed paths, and we've formed six-figure incomes together. We've collabed on projects, and now we have this book coming out and we have a really serious publisher. I know I would have had access to that, and Brad's had access to both of our networks. And I think no matter what you do for a living, creating content and willing to get over the cringe factor of, you know, seeing your face online radically impacts your net worth and your experience and your network. It's I've landed real estate deals, like connections that that I would have never had, but someone found my content fascinating, totally irrelevant to real estate, but it's like, this guy's good. I really like what you're doing. You seem like a good guy, and we actually got this project, and like literally stuff like that. I got to wake up to an Instagram DM of an opportunity. So like, I encourage everyone to create content no matter what you do. I can't see a bad thing in it. It's only every time you create content, it creates opportunity and exposure. You never know who you reach.
Sure. That's really good. Awesome. Let's dive into the book a little bit. And then I do have some rapid fire questions too. Dr. Brad, what's the book all about? I know there are 21 harsh truths.
They're pretty harsh. And so, and really each chapter, it was kind of a fun book for me to write. It's my ninth, but anyway, don't tell my other children, but it's the best one by far. Nice. Each chapter is a unique essay. So it's kind of fun in that sense. And you mentioned teachers, like one of our chapters is your teachers can't teach you how to get rich. And your boss is not going to teach you how to be a financially free entrepreneur. Like there's a good chance your boss isn't financially free themselves. And then secondly, why would they want to equip you to leave your day job and leave them hanging?
Yeah. You've got to really consider who you're taking advice from, right?
Exactly. Absolutely. Exactly. So we have 21 chapters that are sort of hard hitting. Another one I'll just mention is, you know, you don't want to become a millionaire. You just want to spend $1 million. And we give people the millionaire test, you know? So if Adrian and I gave you $1 million, what would you do with it? And you can tell whether somebody has an abundance rich mindset or a poor mindset based on their answer.
Absolutely.
And the typical answer, most Americans, they'll rattle off all the stuff they want to buy. And when you put all that in a calculator, go ahead and try it. You know, there's $1 million and then subtract all that stuff. You don't have $1 million pretty soon. And as a matter of fact, you have nothing very soon. Whereas the rich mindset, a millionaire mindset would look at that $1 million and how can I invest that? I'm going to take that. I'm going to invest it and it's going to spin off cash for me for the rest of my life.
Absolutely.
And so it's truths like that, that we really try to hit with compelling titles that sort of shake you up a little bit.
Yeah. Adrian, what else is in the book that may be controversial?
I think the one we've gotten the most heat from, and I actually think we're going to get some bad press, is if you want to get rich, you have to get rid of your poor friends.
Mm-hmm. Talk about that more. Yeah.
Yeah. So we define in the very first page of the book what poor actually means. Poor is a mindset, where broke actually means I have no money. Like we've all been broke, and broke is can be a temporary state. Poor is your ability. You could, like, people that inherit a lot of money, they can invest it in really bad deals and lose it all, or they can just start spending. So it's like on paper, they're rich, but they have a poor mindset. And so I think when we talk about this, people are like, well, what am I supposed to do? Like, you can't go around saying, hey, are you a millionaire? Can you be friends? I want to be like you. It doesn't work like that. But it's more about finding people around in your circle, in person, online, like your community here, people that are listening to your podcast. And with your content, everyone here that's listening has a rich mindset, because you could be watching Netflix right now, binging something, but you're trying to improve your to go to the next level. So
absolutely.
These are things, like, imagine if all your podcast listeners got in a room together, like that'd be an amazing room of people who have a rich mindset. So it's like trying to find those in real life. And sometimes our family members tend to be people who are holding us back. They don't really have a poor mindset. And that's the trickiest one. Cause when we got comments like that, it's like, no, we're not saying, hey, sorry, sis. Like, sorry, brother. Sorry, dad. But it's more of like knowing what to talk about or conversation to avoid.
Yeah.
Cause sometimes, and I think Brad has done a lot of research on this, on why being around, like, even your friends that you grew up with and you start going on a faster path than they, why sometimes it feels like they're holding you back or even push you down. Brad, do you want to share some of the psychology of that?
Yeah. It's real simple. It's like, it's because they love you. That's really what it is. And they're afraid they're going to lose you. Right. So we're wired to be around in tribes, right? This is how we spent 99% of our time on Earth. And if all of a sudden somebody you love is starting to leave your tribe, it's going to make you anxious. You know, it's one of the reasons why people come into money and then blow it all, because on the reverse side, they're afraid of leaving their family. Right. Yeah. And so subconsciously they get rid of it all. This happens a lot to people who question, why am I always sabotaging myself? Well, this is probably the reason why.
Yeah.
And so it's not because they're evil or bad. It's because they're afraid of losing you. And it's important to know that. And
that
so
makes
you're
a lot
gonna,
of sense. Yeah.
It's lonely. It's lonely to leave your tribe.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense to have more of an empathetic view of the people who are holding you back. They're not trying to hold you back to hurt you. It is because they love you. And if you were in their shoes, you'd probably be doing the same thing. Right. So I can identify with that. When I worked for the federal government for 14 years. The second half of that was I was part-time and I was building my businesses. And man, so it was not a quick, rip off the Band-Aid, jump in with 2 feet kind of thing into entrepreneurship. But over that 7 years, I mean, I loved a lot of the people I worked with. They're great people. But there was such a pull on me, you know, in two very different directions. And I felt very held back not by any one person, like it was a personal thing, but I just felt like they just don't understand what I'm even thinking about right now. It's a different mindset, literally. And eventually I did quit a couple of years ago, which has been great. But absolutely, there's the very good people not trying to hurt me at all. They know their world, and that's a great way to look at it. They didn't want to lose me and lose, not that it's all about me, but yeah, I have a lot less contact with my coworkers now. So that makes a lot of sense. They're operating out of love and fear and a combination of those two. Besides your book and your 9 books, Dr. Brad, what other book would you recommend to our listener?
Well, I don't remember the author's name. You can look it up, but it's Sapiens. This is the book that I read. Sapiens. I reread this book every year. It's just called Sapiens. And it really talks about, sort of intersubjective reality. And I don't want to go too far on this, but essentially we are making up so many stories about everything in our life. And what's mind blowing about that's actually how human beings became the dominant species, by the way, is our ability to make up stories, right? Mm-hmm. We need to all get together for this one reason, and it's all sort of made up. But what is so fascinating about that is if you can really deeply understand that as a human being, you are wired to just make up stories all the time. Mm-hmm. It's a light bulb moment for you because you can then look at your life right now and realize, oh my gosh, I've made up all the stories that are running through my head right now. Mm-hmm. Those stories are giving me the results I'm getting in my life. Mm-hmm. If I'm not happy with those results, maybe I should come up with a different story. And once you have that awareness, then of course you need to search for what story I should come up with. And by the way, that's a fun search, that read books, study people who are living the life you want to live. But for me, that I revisit that one every year just to remind myself to think about what is the story I'm making up about my wife today, because I'm kind of irritated with her. So what story am I making up? And is this a good story? Is this going to help me or is it going to hurt me?
Well, that's really cool because it's empowering. And it, you talked about the stories, and Adrian, earlier you talked about the video games and essentially how a lot of this could be approached like a game, and you're playing a game. This is obviously a little more real than just turning off the PlayStation or whatever, but so I like that though, because they're both empowering viewpoints. They're both empowering mindsets where you can approach. You have a lot of influence over your own life and what happens with that. Adrian, how about a book or two that you could recommend?
For sure, the book that continues to make the biggest impact in my life is The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so popular. I almost don't like saying it because it's almost so cliche. But what I'll mention this that's super relevant, because although that book is geared towards online business, the thing that I feel like I still implement, it's like an ingrained mindset, is this idea that I don't have to do everything in my business. And so if you think of whoever the president, whoever it is in president, any point in time, mm-hmm. they're the president of an entire country, and they manage that, right, to the best of their abilities, but they have so much people and staff. And I think, and if you think of Fortune 500 CEOs, they have people, they have assistants. And so all this, the 4-Hour Workweek concept is part of the problem of being entrepreneurs, that people sell the dream of you get financial freedom and time. But a lot of entrepreneurs I know are trapped inside their business. Instead of working 40 hours a week, they're working 80. And out of ego, they say, well, I'd rather work 80 for myself. It's like, not me. I don't want to work 80 ever.
Right.
In order to do that, I have to have someone actually read my emails before they get to me, or else that sucks up a lot of my time. I need an assistant. I need someone who's posting my content. I need someone who's researching collaborations. So I have people that are doing these things that I'm not doing, although I've trained them how to do. And that I think is the true essence of the 4-Hour Workweek. It's not mm-hmm. online entrepreneurship. You can make a lot of money online. I think the most powerful thing is you need to let go and you need to outsource. And that's how you streamline, where when you go to bed, you've got people still thinking, and how do I make Jamie more money and get more deals? When you wake up, then you have more, that momentum never stops. So I think that's something I think about. And I'll just mention very briefly, I think I realized after I was living in the van and I moved and I'm here in Austin, Texas. I remember we got a house and stuff, and my businesses were so 4-Hour Workweek optimized, and my personal life wasn't. So I would cook, then I would clean. And I was like, wait a second. And I was doing these chores and I was doing yard work. I was like, how did I like financial freedom so I could do chores? No.
Right.
So then, so then I got, you know, it's like the same concept as like, how do you want to spend your life after you've achieved financial freedom? Do you want to do it? Do you want to be spending it doing chores and cooking? And we have a chef and we have a cleaner and we have a house admin. Like, and these are all things like when you start creating income, it's like, I'd rather spend money on that to own my time than buy all this sure. stuff, you know? So yeah. I think that's, again, it's still a really awesome book that I think about a lot.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, just because it's popular doesn't mean it's not good, right? So, yeah, I mean, I imagine your 50-person team is making you money when you're playing pickleball, which is awesome. I love that. So let's see. As far as just in your, I know you're kind of coming, both of you are coming to your industries, you have very different backgrounds, but what's one thing you see that's maybe controversial, whether, let's say creating content or in the world of, you know, psychology. I know those are two massive, massive industries, but what's something that you disagree with that's controversial that you see a lot of today? Either one of you can hop in on that one.
Wait, Brad, I don't know if you want to do this, but there was one chapter in the book that we did disagree on and we had different perspectives and it was actually about real estate.
Okay. I like that. What was that? If you're good with it, Dr. Brad.
Yeah, sure. go ahead. So anyway, this chapter we talk about, it's controversial. We're basically saying, you know, giving all the data on going to college and marriage and buying a house and millionaire status, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't have to do any one of those things, but it is associated with being much wealthier overall. And so Adrian got all nerded out, you know, usually I'm the nerd and he got his spreadsheets out and he made a very compelling case that's really difficult to argue with, in terms of the spreadsheet on that renting is actually a better financial move for you than buying a house. Mm-hmm. And so he and I had a fun discussion and sort of battle with there. Cause I definitely come from the psychology side where I think that the home, what it does for most Americans is it's forced savings. So it locks money away in something that you can't just go blow on shit, which is what most people would do.
Yeah.
But I think the point of that chapter, I think, is to, you know, are married people richer? Yes, absolutely. Like, you know, between 25 and 35, they're 10x richer than single people. Now, should you get married? Well, that's entirely up to you because divorce will wipe you out, you know? Yeah. And same thing with college, like the average college grad, we can say that everything's changed, but they make 1.2 million more during their lifetime. Like that's, and by the way, those are numbers from like today, you know, when they study those things. But is college a good idea? Well, look, I make videos on the worst college degrees. You can go spend $50,000 on a college degree that pays less than minimum wage. And I think that's a horrible idea for everybody, unless your parents are rich. So it really, we're trying not to give advice because we don't know you. We don't know the listener.
No, that's really
but
good.
We're just trying to give the facts and help people think it through so they can make a conscious decision.
And I like that and I do note investing mentorship, one-on-one mentorship with people. And that's one of the key components to our program is, I don't know where you're coming from and I don't know where you want to go. So let's not slap a one size fits all, you know, solution on you. Let's talk about this and so I can get a better understanding of where you're coming from and where you want to go. Adrian, do you disagree with anything Dr. Brad just said?
No, well, he mentioned it. It was the home aspect. So people in the fire movement specifically, and I was living proof that like your home, although I think Brad phrased it perfectly, is like for the smart investor, I would say everyone that's listening here, you guys are the smart investors. you could live efficiently off rent, and the difference between all the extra phantom costs of adding a home, instead of going and spending that, you go invest that.
Right.
But that's not what the normal person does.
Consumer, the average American. Right. Right.
And so Brad's point is a really great point of, you know, it's forced savings into that mortgage.
Absolutely.
And, but on paper, I went through so much research and data to prove that if on paper, if we take out the emotion, which is possible, like it's better to rent and then invest, you make better return. But I think that was the thing. I'm curious on your take, Jamie.
I think, this is going to sound like a cop out, but I think for someone like you, Adrian, it probably makes more sense to rent, you know, because you are smart with your money. But I think for most people, they're not going to save and or invest the difference. They're gonna waste it. So I think for most people, owning a home does make sense because of that forced savings element. Mm-hmm. And also on the school point, You know, that's a tough one because I mean, my daughter's going to go to college most likely, and I'm, you know, we're gonna pay for that, and I think that's going to be a good investment for her. It's a chicken or the egg kind of thing. It's a correlation kind of thing. You know, I studied some criminology back in the day, and I remember learning that crime goes up when the ice cream sales go up, and you know, is one causing the other? Of course not. It's, you know, during the summer there just tends to be more of both. I could argue that people go to college or get an advanced degree or multiple degrees like Dr. Brad has because they're smart and driven, and those people would be successful without those degrees. It's not that they got the degree that's what caused them to be successful. So yeah, it's we're back to, if there's not one, you know, one answer for everyone, and everyone is different.
But I'll say this: nobody has ever committed a crime while eating ice cream. So that's the one thing we do know.
How could you possibly do that? That's a great point. A friend of mine has a real estate podcast called Ice Cream with Investors, and that's the first part of the first segment is they talk about your favorite ice cream and everything. I mean, how can you not have a great conversation when you're having ice cream, right? How about the role of luck, Adrian, the role of luck in success? What is luck real? Do you make your own luck? What's your take on luck?
I don't know if I believe in luck. I think I shared this the other day when I was talking to Brad. Is Brad and I probably have combined created 10,000 videos online.
Wow.
And out of those 25, or sorry, out of those 10,000, I think I have like 25 that went viral. I'm talking like millions and millions of views. So split 50-50, 5,000 videos, 25 actually went viral. And most of them probably have, you know, 10,000 views or less. On average, mm-hmm. I looked up right before, actually in prep for some podcasts, I've had 183 million views on my TikTok.
Wow.
So like, I think effort, you know, the effort is the thing I try to focus on. And the more effort I'm going to keep posting, cause I have optimism that if I'm doing this right strategy, it's going to create success. Sure. I'm not banking that I had, a viral video, which is like trying to hope for luck to happen. Mm-hmm. I don't create content to go viral. I create content to create value. And maybe one of those is going to blow up. And of course, does that help everything? Absolutely. Those were my highest record income days and followers and leads and business opportunities. Like, of course, I wish it would happen all the time. But I know that if I focus on the strategy long-term, you know, so I know, yeah, it's a tough one for me. Cause like, I don't know if I believe I'm not thinking about that luck. I'm thinking about, am I doing the right thing in strategy? And that's for me as a content creator, keep creating, keep adding sure. value.
Well, it sounds like you're building off of the work ethic that your parents gave you early on, and you're putting yourself in the right position to get lucky. But that's not your focus. But if you keep showing up consistently, keep, like you said, focusing on adding value and serving others, luck has a way of finding you. Anything mm-hmm. to add there, Dr. Brad?
Yeah. So, you know, one perspective on luck that I think about all the time is how incredibly lucky we are, frankly, to be here in the United States at this For sure. time in history. And obviously, I can't control any of that. But I know I have friends and clients who are in Europe and European country, I'm not going to name it, but he's like, there is a 0% probability you can go from poor to rich in this country. You cannot start a business unless you're connected politically or you have affiliations with organized crime. I mean, and so I think it's really, really, I remind myself all the time of this incredible land of opportunity.
Sure.
And to whatever degree, if you're here, you're blessed. You're more blessed than 99.999% of people who've ever lived on Earth.
So true.
And so part of that can't control, but I'm a firm believer in making my own luck, including mm-hmm. my bad luck. Like the studies that we've done on ultra wealthy people is they are more likely to mm-hmm. blame themselves for their bad luck. They're like, okay, so something bad happened. What did I do to contribute to this? What did sure. I miss? And if you're not asking yourself those questions, you're doomed to have bad luck the rest of your life.
That's a great point. Awesome. All right. These are going to be real rapid fire, and then we'll get out of here. We'll go back and forth. Adrian, if you could go back and give your 18-year-old self some advice, what would that be?
YouTube, like day one, learn YouTube. Don't be afraid.
Love that. Dr. Brad, if you were given $10 million tomorrow, I know you guys asked a similar question. What would you do with it?
I would invest all of it, and I would immediately start taking about $400,000 a year to spend.
Awesome. Adrian, what is one challenge that you're facing in your business? Maybe you're working 5 hours a week instead. I'm just kidding. What's a challenge you're facing in your business right now?
I have a software called Bramify, which is like an all-in-one solution for running your online business. And it's 6 months in, and churn rate is like 10%. So we're losing 10% of customers every time. We have 1,200 customers right now. And so like, I'm super new. How do I keep people on and stay on and making sure that the platform is adding value? That, man, if someone wants to hit me up with the answer to that.
Yeah. Awesome. Dr. Brad, if you could start a business tomorrow, what would that be?
Ooh, I would definitely, first of all, I'd want to have some glide time, you know, like, so Adrian and I, we're not the type to go take out loans to start businesses because most businesses fail.
Yeah.
But I would start frankly, a consulting business on helping professionals utilize social media to create personal brands and increase their income. That's probably the business I would start.
That makes sense. You alluded to that earlier, Adrian, as far as the asymmetric bets and where if it goes south, you know, you maybe lost some time and effort, but not millions of dollars. Adrian, what's one question that you wish I'd asked you that I haven't?
I think, how much money do you need to be happy?
Go for it.
This is only my answer.
Yeah.
So everyone's answer is different, but I believe that if you have the freedom of time and the freedom of choice, I think that whatever the money it is for you to do those things, because I truly believe objects don't bring us happiness. They bring us sadness. Like every object you own actually owns you. Mm. So with that mindset, I think for me, I just need enough money to, by the way, I'm not saying live in a van. I'm saying like, if I want to go to Ireland, which I lived for a year because I just missed my friends over there, I can fly to Ireland tomorrow. Like that's still freedom. That's like, there's still a lot of money that I need to do that. But that freedom of choice, the freedom to pursue an art right now, you know, we have a book coming out. This is my first book. I love it so far. What if when I'm on my ninth book, like Brad, I'm like, I hate this. I never want to write a book again. And I'm not trapped to it, that I have the freedom to change. So I think that freedom, whatever that number is, that's my answer. Because I think that freedom is empowering, and I can choose to spend my time however I'd like, whoever I'd like to spend it with.
Is there a number that you don't have to give it, but for you, is there a number?
like a specific
like
a number?
Net worth, the number that
I think I feel like my cost of living right now is $15,000 a month. And gotcha. I live off like my investments pay for that. So for me, like I'm not living higher than $15,000 a month, and I haven't for a long time despite income. So I would say that's my number.
That's good. Dr. Brad, what is the biggest psychological barrier that you are facing right now?
The biggest barrier that I'm facing is essentially it all comes down to locus of control. And so successful people have an internal locus of control. They blame themselves for things. I'm always looking to blame myself for more and more things. And if you can find something that I can change in my thinking, because to me, it's super empowering, and we all have blind spots related to it. Like, I feel like I'm functioning pretty well, but I know I must be missing something. Like, is there a different way I can look at something? Is there some other way I can take, you know, even more responsibility for something in my life? Because I find it not shaming. I find it incredibly empowering.
I love that. That's really good. Adrian, where can our listeners find you online?
Right now, if you want to learn more from Brad and myself, startthinkingrich.com. I can't believe we own that domain for our book, which is awesome. But it has, I think, our book. That's the best way if you like mindsets. Maybe I feel like, especially with your listeners, Jamie, they might not need our book. They sound like they're a super savvy audience, but maybe you guys know someone who aspires to change. Maybe you guys would know someone to recommend it. But on that page, you'll find links to Brad and I. And we also have a special page if for just listeners that come from this podcast. So that's going to be startthinkingrich.com/Jamie. And then we're going to try to make the context of like some bonus offers that are more relevant for your audience here too.
I love that. I mean, I would challenge that a little bit in the sense of, I mean, I think everyone needs a, you know, you've never arrived, right? So you always need that growth and that reminder, even if your book has some fundamental truths that my listeners are familiar with and have implement daily, they still need that exposure to those harsh truths. And you said you come at things in a challenging way. So I'm excited to read the book myself. Dr. Brad, anything to add as far as where to find you online?
Nope, that's it. You can find us on any of your social media platforms too. At Dr. Brad Klontz, at Brambila Bong, or at Adrian Brambila. So we're there pumping out videos, trying to get in your head.
Yeah. I love what you guys are doing. It's such a, you know, it's not a soft approach. Like you said, it's challenging, you know, which is what we need. We need real conversation, not these beating around the bush, you know, soft approach here. It's hard hitting truths, but you're trying to help people and you're adding value. And clearly, you know, money does matter, right? It's not something to pretend. You know, we shouldn't be pretending that money has no value. It does matter. But it's not all about collecting toys and just, you know, gaining, you know, the number of things you own. It's like you said, Adrian, it's about options and being able to control your time and do what you want to do and serve others through that abundance mindset. I love it. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. This has been great.
Dude, thanks so much for having us. It was a blast.
And to the listener out there, thank you for joining us. Please check out our website, adversity2abundance.com. That's the number 2, adversity2abundance. And if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Thanks all. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversity2abundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
All right, here's the deal. You work hard for your money. Isn't it about time you put your money to work for you? If you are an accredited investor, check out LabradorLending.com. Our Integrity Income Fund provides monthly cash flow from an investment backed by hard physical real estate. Our income fund, which is uncorrelated to publicly traded stocks and bonds, invests in first lien mortgage notes diversified by geography, property value, and borrower type. So you're not investing in one project. You're investing in a diversified portfolio of first lien mortgage notes. Our Integrity Income Fund aims to pay its investors monthly distributions at a preferred rate of return of 8% annually. Possibly the best part, though, the fund showcases a short 12-month commitment, so you can invest your capital today and have access to that capital in 1 year. Check it out today, LabradorLending.com.